It's Friday morning, TGIF on the Tony Conley Morning Show, 1320 WILS, 1320WILS.com. 60 degrees on this glorious Friday. Peter Schiff is a CEO, a radio talk show host, and an author. Mr. Schiff predicted the housing crash and what would follow in its wake. He's got a new book out called The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country. And that was released at the end of May. It's already become a New York Times bestseller, and Mr. Schiff is on the other end of our line. Peter, how are you?
I'm well this morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Before we talk about a menagerie of topics, tell us about what happened in 2008, how you saw the housing crash and what would follow with it.
The key was understanding the errors that were being made at the Federal Reserve and in Congress. See, the housing bubble was a creation of government policy. It was a combination of bad monetary policy and then bad fiscal and regulatory policy. So what happened was the Federal Reserve kept interest rates artificially low to stimulate the economy. But what that did is it made houses a lot more affordable because people were able to borrow money at artificially low rates, but rates that could not stay low indefinitely. And so they brought rates low, and that enabled people to buy houses. But what really turned it into a bubble was then the government went and guaranteed the mortgages so that people could use teaser rates to buy homes that they couldn't afford. And under normal circumstances, banks would have denied the loans. But once the government guaranteed them, then it didn't matter to the banks whether they could be repaid because the government was standing behind them. So it was a combination of government-insured mortgages and artificially low interest rates that created the bubble. And then I understood how important that bubble was to the entire economy because everybody was spending their home equity. Their house, you know, people weren't saving. They were buying stuff based on the idea that they were rich because they owned a house. And I knew that eventually the teaser rates were going to go up, mortgage rates were going to move higher, home prices were going to start to fall, and that was going to reverse the whole process. And then I knew that when real estate prices collapsed, that the banks would then have to fail because they didn't really have the collateral behind their loans. I knew Fannie and Freddie was going to go bankrupt. I knew that we would go into this huge recession. And so this I could see coming from a mile away. But the interesting part about my book, my original book, Crash Proof, that predicted all this, that was not the real crash that I was afraid of. I knew that that was going to be bad. I knew that the worst recession since the Great Depression, which is what I forecast, would be bad. But the crash, the economic collapse that I was really afraid of, was the one that's coming next. Because I was convinced the government would repeat all the mistakes that created the housing bubble and would create an even bigger bubble, which we have now in the government, both in the bond market and in the dollar, that we would print all this money and try to artificially stimulate the economy. And the collapse that we were going to get when that stimulus wore off was going to be much worse in 08. And I think we are right on schedule and headed for the real crash, which is the topic of my just-released book.
Should the government have helped the financial industry, the housing industry, and the auto industry?
Well, no. I mean, first of all, if it wasn't for the government, they wouldn't have been in trouble in the first place, and they wouldn't have needed to be saved. But two wrongs don't make a right. I think that the bailouts were a mistake. I think banks should have been allowed to fail. I think GM and Chrysler should have been allowed to go bankrupt. And I think they should have restructured, through a bankruptcy proceeding. It doesn't mean that the automobile industry would go away. I think it would have been a lot stronger had we not bailed them out. And I think our financial system would be a lot stronger had we allowed a lot of the weaker, over-leveraged players to fail. It might have been a little bit more painful in the short run to the economy, but it would be much more healthy in the long run. In fact, we would be reaping the rewards of that right now. But instead, we propped everything up, and by doing that, we exacerbated all the problems. And now we have a lot more pain in our future as opposed to the growth that we would have been able to look forward to had we swallowed the bitter-tasting medicine that was necessary to cure the economy.
Peter, a lot of people here in Michigan, I'm sure, would disagree with the auto bailout because it appears that the big three are well on their way to success. They're paying back the loans. They've started rehiring folks.
Not a chance. GM is going to go bankrupt again. In fact, I predicted the bankruptcy of GM initially when the stock was in the 50s. I mean, I knew that that company was headed for bankruptcy, and unfortunately, the problems that led to the bankruptcy the first time, they're still there. you know, GM is still not really globally competitive. And the only reason they're able to sell cars right now is because the government is subsidizing all the auto loans. And so a lot of people are buying GM cars that really can't afford them. It's almost like a subprime thing going on in the auto industry. But I think you have big losses that are going to come up. As soon as interest rates go up, and eventually interest rates are going to go way up, we're going to be in a pretty deep recession, and GM is going to have huge losses. And they're going to need to be bailed out again. I mean, GM is like the post office now. But if you had just let them go bankrupt and gotten rid of all these union contracts and gotten rid of all these obligations and allowed new management to come in and buy up those assets and rehire workers based on new competitive contracts, you'd probably have two or three times as many people working at those plants right now. They'd be making less money, but they'd be making cars that were globally competitive. But now we basically sacrificed their profitability and their growth so we can temporarily give the unions a bunch of money. Now, in the process, we destroyed the rule of law. We ripped off the bondholders. I think we created some very bad and dangerous precedents in the way that bailout went down, because I think a lot, we compromised the integrity of our capital markets, and I think a lot of people would be afraid. I mean, I think that any unionized company is going to have a hard time really borrowing money from legitimate sources, or because who's going to want to lend to them if they think that their legal rights are going to be sacrificed because the unions have a lot of political power.
Are you anti-union?
Well, I'm anti the special breaks that unions get with respect to the way they negotiate. I mean, I think people have a right to unionize. But I don't think employers, I think employers have a right to fire people if they don't want them in a union.
Peter,
you know, people can bargain collectively, but they can't hold their employer hostage. You know, if people want to strike, they should, if I'm an employer, I should be able to fire people. I should be able to say, look, I don't even want my workers unionized. So I think the government shouldn't be able to come in and slant the playing field. And I also don't like the way unions are organized, in that unions take dues from their members and then they give them to the politicians that they like, even if their members prefer somebody else. So if you have unions giving a lot of money to Democrats, not all the unions are supporters of the Democratic Party. There could be Republicans who are members of unions, yet their union dues are being taken from them and given to Democratic candidates. So I don't think they should be able to make donations to political parties. I think it should be up to the individual members. If the individuals want to give to parties, fine. But you can't have an organization that is taking money from people against their will and then funding the political candidates that they might be opposed to. I think there are a lot of problems with the way unions operate. And I don't believe there should be any public sector unions. So private sector, okay, but I don't believe like teachers or firefighters or policemen should be allowed to unionize. I mean, if you want to work for the government, you want to work for the taxpayer, then you're not going to be in a union. That's just the bottom line. Because the problem is, it's not fair when you have the labor leaders negotiating with the politicians that they help elect, and the taxpayers who are paying the salaries don't even have a seat at the bargaining table. So I think the whole process is corrupt, and that's why you have such an overpayment. I mean, public sector workers now make something like 50 to 100% more than the private sector workers because of this incestuous relationship between the labor unions and the politicians that they elect. So I think you got to basically sever that, and the best way to do it is to just not let the public workers unionize. And in fact, even Franklin Roosevelt, who I'm not a fan of Franklin Roosevelt at all, he's a big Democrat, but even Franklin Roosevelt believed that the public sector should not be allowed to unionize. Even Roosevelt was against that.
We're talking with Peter Schiff, who's a CEO, a national radio talk show host, and he's written a new book. Peter, I apologize for not getting to that right away, but I have a few more questions, and we will talk about the new book. When do you think GM will go bankrupt again, and when will we see another recession in this country?
Well, I think that's going to happen, and I think the GM bankruptcy is going to happen when a lot of the big banks go bankrupt again. I think the day of reckoning is going to come when interest rates go way up, and because they're going to. Right now, the Fed's got interest rates at zero, and this is the only reason that this phony economy is going, because we got the cheap money that's propping it up. But eventually, just like what's happening right now in Greece or Spain, eventually interest rates rise because creditors are worried that you can't pay back the money. I mean, we've borrowed so much money, it's impossible to pay it back. The only reason that we can even make the interest payments is because the rates are so low. But that's all about our creditors' perception of our creditworthiness and of inflation expectations. But once people start to realize that a lot more inflation is coming and that U.S. has borrowed too much money, then interest rates are going to go way up. And when interest rates go way up, the banks are going to fail. And, you know, people aren't going to be able to borrow money to buy cars. They're not going to be able to borrow money to buy houses. A lot of this consumption is going to dry up. And plus, the costs are going to go up because inflation is going to drive up the costs of steel, the cost of, all the materials you use to make cars. So cars are going to be a lot more expensive to make, but people aren't going to be able to buy them because they're not going to be able to get car loans. I mean, it's almost going to be like the only people who are going to be able to buy a new car are people who can pay 100% cash. And you're going to need a lot more cash because the price could be a lot higher. So I think the whole market is going to implode for automobiles in America. And I think Americans are going to stop buying cars for a long time. I think we're going to have to live with the cars that we have. We're not going to be making whatever new cars are manufactured are going to have to be exported to other countries where the consumers can actually pay for the cars. But our economy is going to have to go through this huge restructuring because we've been borrowing too much, we've been consuming too much, we have to save more, we have to produce more. And so if you're a business that is relying on an American customer, you're going to have a lot of trouble, especially if that American customer needs a loan to buy your product because those consumer loans are going to dry up because the money is going to be too expensive. People are not going to be able to borrow it, just like for the government. The credit's going to dry up for the government. Credit's going to dry up for U.S. consumers. And this whole, we have an economy based on credits, spending borrowed money. And that whole economy implodes when we can't borrow the money anymore.
Peter, I recently watched a 33-minute YouTube video piece of you testifying before Congress. And you seem to have easy questions for tough challenges, and you seem frustrated in your dialogue with Congress.
Well, the whole thing was a frustrating experience to actually watch these congressmen actually, thinking about all the damage that they've already done to the housing market with Fannie and Freddie and guaranteeing single-family mortgages. What these geniuses want to do is they want to do the same thing with apartments and multifamily units. They want the government to guarantee these mortgages so that they can be collateralized and sold, exactly what happened with the subprime. They want to do the same thing with apartments and put the U.S. taxpayer on the hook for these mortgages. And I'm like, are you got to be kidding? I mean, we just saw this. We just saw this disaster, and you want to create it all over again. And meanwhile, everybody testifying other than me is a lobbyist for the housing industry, for the mortgage industry, and they're trying to get the same subsidies that they got before. And I'm the only guy there with any sanity trying to tell these politicians, come on, how could you do this? How could you be so stupid as to make the same mistake twice within just a few years after you've seen the collapse in the housing market that was already created? And, if you want to actually see my presentation, the whole thing, the 33 minutes, it's on YouTube. Just type in Mr. Schiff Returns to Washington. That's the title of it. And I wish more people would see it. I mean, right now it's got close to 60,000 views, but it should have, it should have millions of views. People need to know what's going on in these congressional hearings because they're not really hearings. They're just rubber stamping these political agendas, and they're dominated by special interest groups. They are not making policy that's good economics. They're trying to get votes. They're trying to get reelected by giving money to the special interest groups that fund their campaigns. That's all that's going on.
Peter's latest book is called The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country, was released, as I mentioned earlier, at the end of May. It's a New York Times bestseller. Tell us about your book.
Well, I said the book, The Real Crash, I wrote that book to just remind people that the crash that I predicted in my 2007 book hadn't happened yet. People think that the economic crash happened in 08. It didn't. It began in 08, but it hasn't, it's not finished, not by a long shot. It's going to get a lot worse because we didn't solve any of the underlying structural problems. The stimulus and the bailouts just made those problems worse, and we simply postponed the consequences to a future date. Well, that future date is, rapidly approaching, and we had better understand what is going to happen and why it's going to happen because we can't afford to make the same mistakes again. The problems are now so bad that if we keep doing this stimulus, you know, we're going to overdose on it, and it's going to be, you know, we're going to die. We're going to destroy our economy. We're going to destroy our currency.
All right, Peter, if we can, I'm up against the clock here. If we can, I'd like to schedule you to come back on next week and let us dive into that book and some of the particulars on how we can save ourselves and our country.
Sure.
With the information that you put in the book.
Absolutely. In the meantime, if people want to learn a little bit more about it, you mentioned I do a radio show. People can go to shiftradio.com. I do a show 2 hours a day from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time. And if it's not on, you know, in your area, just listen on the Internet, shiftradio.com. And if you can't listen live, you can just listen delayed because we repeat the show all day.
All right, Peter. Thanks so much. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks for having me on.
It's 8:52. You're listening to the Tony Conley Morning Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com. It's 60 degrees. When we come back, I think we're going to try and tell you how much a gallon of gas is going to cost you for the 4th of July weekend. We'll do that next on 1320.